teasing me. That's what you're doing. She's been threatening to fall asleep tonight. And she's been teasing me across the room here all night. Claude said to me, and I said, well, I'll just look around and see how many are asleep by 8 o'clock, and we'll make that decision at 8 o'clock, see how many are still with me at that point. Since we were talking about Abraham and Sarai, and how she had to put up with some of Abraham's decisions, when we left for this conference, my wife said, now, I'm going to take along a coat and a tie and a shirt. And I said, oh, that's foolish. She said, we don't need a tie, a shirt, and a, you know how we are, husbands. We all. I said, we don't need a tie, a shirt, and a coat. Yeah, she said, I just have a feeling you might need it. And then Claude, you know, said, well, I'm going to be wearing a shirt, a tie, and a coat tomorrow night. Wrong again. You know how it is, fellas. Well, I feel pretty good about Abraham at this point. We've got him back from Egypt. And I want to remind you, of course, this very important point. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 13 now. Let's remember this very important point. We just pause here a minute before we take the next, God's next step with Abraham, Abram. Supposing Abram had stayed in Egypt. Now really, you can see, you know, God had to almost balm him out of there, didn't he? You know, you stop and think about it. He had to send a plague. He had to use a Gentile unbeliever and stir his wrath up to get Abraham out of there. If that hadn't happened, think about it. Would we even have heard of the name of Abram? Because at this point, he didn't have the heir. The nation wasn't born. If Abram had stayed down there in Egypt, that would have been the end of Abram. For all practical effects. Now, who got him out of there? See? God did. Who got him out of Ur of the Chaldees when he was there in pagan darkness? God did. Who got him out of Egypt when he slipped and went down into the world? God did. See? And we want to remember this because we're going to come to some highlights now in Abram's life. He's going to do some wonderful things. Here in these next couple of chapters, some amazing things. And you know what's going to happen to us? We're going to do what we always do as human beings. We're going to say, boy, this Abraham, he's a wonderful fellow. Boy, oh, he's an amazing man. You know, I just don't see anybody be like Abraham. And then you know what God's going to do? He's going to send Abram down again. He's going to make another big mistake. One of the biggest mistakes of his life. And down he goes. And of course, what God is attempting to do for us, as we said the very first night, he wants to get our eyes off the servant, and he wants us to get our eyes on the God who made that servant. And we do this too much, you know. We get our eyes on men. You know, we begin to marvel, oh, what a wonderful person he is. You know, no, he's not a wonderful person. If you knew him like his wife knows him, he's not even wonderful at all. Anything he accomplished is because God did it. God did it over and over and over again in his life. And we got to get our eyes off the servant and get our eyes on the God who made that servant. And the wonderful way that God can take hold of a vessel and break him and use him. That's the amazing thing about God, that he can take broken vessels and use them. Now let's look at the 13th chapter of Genesis. Keep this in mind, because Abram's going to make a wonderful decision here, but it's only by the grace of God that he does it. Then Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him. Here's Lot, you know, just pacing along there with him, to the south. Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. That's some of the leftovers from Egypt. And he went on his journey from the south as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Lot also, who went with Abraham, had flocks and herds and tents. You know, in the meantime, Lot was doing okay down there in Egypt, too. It was a good place for loading up on things, you know. There was lots of prosperity down there in Egypt. It's a great place to live, you know, if you wanted to accumulate things. And Lot, he had quite a load, too, as he came back. Now, the land was not able to support them, to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. That's an amazing statement. Say, do you think possibly we've reached that point? Our possessions are so great we can't dwell together. Can this happen to brethren? Verse 7. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelled in the land. That's a strange thing to put in there. I mean, what's that got to do with the story? They don't enter into the picture anywhere else. I wonder why that was stuck in there. Verse 8. So Abram said to Lot, "Please let there be no strife between you and me." Now please note, Abram said to Lot. Lot didn't say this to Abram. Abram said this to Lot. "Please, let there be no strife between you and me and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we're brethren." What a lovely statement, isn't it? We're brethren. "Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left hand, then I'll go to the right. Or if you go to the right, then I'll go to the left." That's a statement of a vessel that's been broken. Verse 10. And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. Before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord. Notice this, like the land of Egypt. You just come up, you know, from there, as you go toward Zoar. So then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east. They separated from each other. Isn't it just amazing the way the Spirit of God just interjects these little things? You know, like, it doesn't say, the Spirit of God could easily have said, "Then Lot chose all the plain of Jordan." That's not the way he puts it. He says, "Then Lot chose for himself." Those two little words, don't they tell us a lot about Lot? Verse 12. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. Not going to stay in that tent very long, you know. He lost his tenting ability. But he's in it for now. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. And the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, "Lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. For all the land which you see, I give to you and your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants also could be numbered. Arise, walk in the land through its length and its breadth, and its width, for I give it to you." Lovely, lovely words that the Lord gave to Abram at this time. Then verse 18, Abram moved his tent. And he kept on moving his tent. He never left it. And he went and dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, which are in Hebron. And he built an altar there to the Lord. Now here's Abram. He's restored to God. You notice in verse 1, he went up from Egypt. Remember back in verse 10 of chapter 12, he went down to Egypt. But now he went up from Egypt. Whenever a man gets back on the path God wants him to be, he goes up. When he leaves the path that God wants him, he goes down. And I don't care whether that pathway leads him to prosperity, to riches, to fame. I don't care where it leads him. In God's book of reckoning, when a man gets out of his path, he goes down. And when he returns, he goes up. And then notice, he went back to Bethel. And we see the tent, and we see the altar, don't we? Now really, you know, in this account, as far as God's concerned, we go from 12:8 to 13:3. All the rest in between is lost time. Right? It's lost time. Wonder how much we're losing. How many years we've flung away. I blush to think of it. Really do. Of the years I've thrown away. On vain things. Worthless things. Stupid things. As far as eternity and as far as God is concerned. Well, Abraham did too. And then we see him, as we go on here, he's calling again on the name of the Lord, isn't he? Notice verse 4. He called on the name of the Lord. The last time we read that was in 12:8, right? Go back to 12:8. You see, he had to have the tent, he had to have the altar before he could call on the name of the Lord. Down in Egypt, he had no tent. He had no altar. So he did not call on the name of the Lord. Back here, he's back in the land. He's got his tent, verse 3. He's got his altar. So he again calls on the name of the Lord. Now remember, if you're going to go in for Egypt, if you're going to take a detour and wander into the world, you are sacrificing the fellowship of God. You can't call on the name of the Lord when you're in that condition. And there can be nothing compared to that loss. There is nothing this world can give you in exchange for that loss. Oh, not to be able to retire at night and lay in your bed and call on the name of the Lord. But you know the Christian that's away from God, that has gone in the wrong direction and is living for this world. He can't. He really can't do it. I mean, he may mumble words. He may, Lord, now lay me down to sleep. I pray that I want my soul to bless and all this. And he may mumble all the words, but his heart is not calling in the name of God. He knows it. He knows there's a gap. There's a distance there between him and the Lord. And he feels it. And he senses it. And he knows it. And it's miserable. It's miserable to live that way. And I can just picture the joy of Abram's heart as he calls on the name of the Lord again. Let's just take a break here and go to Hebrews 12. Just keep your finger there in Genesis. We're going to come back. But I want you, I think this verse is important at this juncture, that we just get hold of this. Notice verse 11 of Hebrews 12. Now, no discipline. Hebrews 12:11. Now no discipline or chastening, chastisement, seems to be joyful for the present, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been, now the thought here really is that word exercise, to those who have been trained by it. In other words, if we do
depart from the Lord, and who of us don't? We all go through these experiences. Hopefully, they get shorter and shorter as time goes by. You know, that is, as we grow in the Lord, our souls become so desperate for His fellowship that the time away from Him becomes agony, and we look for Him to bring us back in shorter time. But if these departures become a training ground for us, if they train us, then God can even use our departures to make us better servants. That's what I believe happened here with Abram. I think Abraham was a better man having gone through this experience. Now, I don't mean to suggest at all that it was proper and right or good for him to go down to Egypt. I'm not suggesting that at all. God never condoned that for a moment, and he was wrong to have done it. But the marvelous thing of the restorative grace of God is that he even takes our stubborn, rebellious ways of wandering and uses those to train us and make us better servants. That's what it's just so remarkable God is. So absolutely remarkable. That he takes even our waywardness and uses it to his glory. And I think we sense immediately as we come into chapter 13, Abram's a better man for having gone through what he did. Now let's notice what happens here. Abram makes a tremendous choice. He would have been totally incapable of making this choice down in Egypt. Totally incapable. A man that's away from God, a man that's in the world, does not discern evil as he should be able to, and therefore makes bad choices. Now let's remember that, because we're living in days where this is one of our problems, brethren and sisters. It really is. The world, we're living so much in the world that we don't discern the evil that's taking place among our brethren and sisters. We condone it. We overlook it. We don't really deal with it, and we make wrong choices. And it's happening all over today. And let's remember that in this dealings, this is really dealings between Abram and Lot, two brethren. Lot was a righteous man, you know. Tells us that over in Peter. You wouldn't know it if Peter hadn't told us. You know, Lot was like a lot of Christians. Unless somebody had told us, we'd never know they were a Christian. But they tell us that Lot was a righteous man. So we've got two brethren here we're dealing with. It's amazing, you know, there were probably hundreds of herdsmen involved in this chapter, in this big quarrel. But God doesn't see it as a situation between the herdsmen. God portrays it as a situation between two brethren, Abram and Lot. That's the way God sees it. He doesn't see all the herdsmen in between. He sees it as Lot and Abraham. Now, Abram makes the right choice in dealing with his brother Lot. His brother Lot was a worldly man away from God, but Abram knew how to deal with it. Because he discerned the evil of what was taking place. He discerned the evil because he was calling on the name of the Lord. That's why. You see, his heart was in tune with God, and he recognized what was happening. Now, let's look at the root of this problem between Abram and Lot. What was the root? Look at verse 16. We'll get this root. Abram was well treated for Sarah's sake, and he had, this is verse 16 of chapter 12, he had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys and camels. And then we come to verse 20. He sent him away with his wife and all that he had. He took all this stuff with him. It went along with him back into Canaan. Remember we said he took a lot of thorns with him from Egypt. All right, then we come into chapter 13. Look at verse 2. Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. And then look down at verse 5. Lot also, who went with him, he had flocks and herds and tents. There was the source of the quarrel. they were fighting over their possessions, over what they had. The material gain had actually caused strife among two brethren. Doesn't it make you sick today to see all the strife among Christians over money? That's often what's involved. We become prosperous. We begin to become rich. And the next thing you know, we're fighting over the wealth, over who's going to get it, over where it's going to go. And then we notice this material gain, as it always does, led to selfish strife. And that we see in 6 and 7. Their possessions were so great, they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. You know, say what you want to, the early church was a poor church. The ones who had some resources sold it and shared it with those who had very little. And certainly no one for a moment would advocate that Christianity is communism and that everybody should have the same amount of wealth and we should evenly distribute it. Nobody's suggesting that. But there's no doubt about it that when the church was poor, the church was more alert. It grew, and brethren dwelled together more in unity, didn't they? And we see that material gain, as much as we value it, as much as we go in for it in this country, as far as the church is concerned, it's never been good for us. It's always led us into problems. And you're kind of thankful, you know, for a man like Peter, who could say, silver and gold have I none, but such as I have in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, rise up and walk. So, this prosperity brought about a difference between the brethren, between the believers. Prosperity has a way of doing that, as we said. And so we see a difference between brethren. That's always sad, when there's a difference between brethren. And when there's a difference between brethren, there's always a concern as to the effect it has on those around. And I really believe that's why the Spirit of God, in His own clever way, the Spirit of God can so often do, just interjects at this point of the narrative, just kind of sticks it in there. You notice in verse 7, the Canaanites and the Perizzites dwell in the land. So is that the Spirit of God says, and by the way, the Canaanites and the Perizzites were watching all this. They saw all this. And I want to tell you something, brethren. When we're quarreling with each other, the world sees it, and they know it, and they're observing, and they talk about it, and they say, these Christians, they can't even get along with themselves. And they know it. And the Spirit of God just kind of puts that in there to prick us a little and make us aware of what we're doing when we strive and quarrel among ourselves. But Abraham comes into the picture. Verse 8. Abram said to Lot. Notice that order. Lot wasn't concerned about this strife. Didn't bother him any. It was Abraham who had the concern. He was the one who initiated, didn't he? The action. Because he was the man who was close to God. He was the one calling in the name of the Lord. And he could not stand to see the name of God blasphemed. He could not stand to see he and his brother and their herdmen fighting with each other. And notice how he recognizes the family relationship here. He says, we're brethren. Now, he was actually his nephew, wasn't he? He wasn't his brother. He was his nephew. He was his brother's son. But he says, we're brethren. He didn't see him as a relative. He saw him as a brother. But of course, the problem was, you know, with Lot, he was never called of God to come to this land. You notice that? He was never called of God. Abram was called. Lot wasn't. He just went along. He just went along with things. So when Abraham left Haran for land of Canaan, Lot went along with it. And when Abram went down to Egypt, Lot went along with it. And when Abram came up from Egypt, Lot went along with it. Right? There was Lot. You know, he was always there. But he had no particular exercise. You know, what can we say? So many Christians, you know, so many of us today, we just kind of go along with things. You know, we're just there. You know, we don't really feel any call of God. We don't really feel any exercise in our hearts that God has put us here for a reason and a purpose, and He's got a plan for our lives, and He's called us to do something. You know, we just kind of go along. You know, well, here we are. You know, okay, this is the way you want to go. That's fine. You know. We'll go that way. Oh, you want to go this way? Okay, we'll go this way. Well, I thought maybe we ought to go over here. Okay, let's go over here, you know, and we just go along. That's the story of so many of us today. We should be ashamed of it, but it is. We lack conviction. That's what Lot was. He was an empty man without conviction. He was tolerant of everything. He would go any direction you wanted him to go, and it never bothered him, never disturbed him. Because he didn't have a call from God. Which means, if he didn't have a call from God, he had no purpose. He had no direction in his life. He didn't know where he was going. And I think we all need to get on our knees about this and ask God to give us direction in our life. And then you notice the wisdom of Abram. God gave him this wisdom. I have no question about it in verse 9. He says, isn't the whole land before you? Please separate from me. It was a wise decision. It was really, in the circumstances, the only decision that could be made. It's sad, you know, sometimes. But sometimes the only decision in dealing with some brethren is to get as far away from them as you can. But it's a sad thing to say, but sometimes it's true. Because their carnality and their stubbornness and their refusal to submit to the will of God makes it almost impossible to deal with them. And under this situation, Abram made the wisest choice he could make. He made a choice that certainly God gave him. And he makes then a most generous offer. Oh, here we see how God had worked in this man's heart. He didn't say to Lot, now look, Lot, we've got to separate. Our testimony is being ruined in the land. We've got to get apart. Well, you think then he'd say, but now look, Lot, you know, God gave me this land. You know, this land belongs to me, Lot. God called me back there in Ur of the Chaldees, and he said, this is my land. And furthermore, Lot, you know, I'm your uncle. You're my nephew. You know, I've got quite a few years in you. So look, I'm making my choice first. You get what's left. Now, I want to hear you grumbling about it. That's the way things are. Couldn't he be taking that position? And wouldn't it have been justified? Wouldn't it have been a righteous decision? Absolutely, it would have been. There's no question about it. But don't you love the spirit of the man at this point? See, God had humbled him. God had broken his spirit. He came back from Egypt, he was a broken man. He had enough of making his own choices. He made one, and it was a bad one. He knew that decisions made without God aren't worth a nickel, and he didn't want any more to do with it. So he said, Lot, you make your choice, I'll take what's left. If you want to go to the right, I'll go to the left. You go ahead and make your choice. Beautiful attitude. Just a beautiful attitude. Oh, if only we were so broken in our dealings with one another. Well, this is the difference in believers. You know, we saw a difference between believers. Now I want you to see a difference in believers. A lot, verse 10, he protests, doesn't he? He says, oh no, Uncle Abraham, no. No, I won't do that. No. You make the first choice. I wouldn't do that. Indeed, he doesn't. Abram tells him to make the choice, and he says, okay, I will. I'll make the first choice. That was Lot. That was Lot all over. And so Lot makes his choice. What a difference between the two. What a difference in attitude. Now notice. Lot lifted up his eyes, it says in verse 10. And I want you to notice this. Lot saw in one direction only. Isn't that true? He looked and all he saw was the plain of Jordan. And it looked like Egypt, and that was enough for him. He had a good time down there. He liked it. And he wanted something that looked just the same. No praying, no asking God to direct him, no looking for, what would be God's choice. No, he looked and he saw something that appealed to his eyes. It had an eye appeal, looked good to him, and he chose for himself. All the plain of Jordan. And they separate. Now, I have a note here in my Bible that I keep here because I just enjoyed this comment so much. It's not my comment. It comes from somebody else's. Almost everything I'm saying tonight does. And it says this. This is the statement. The man of faith, that would be Abraham, can easily afford to allow the man of sight to take his choice. You get that statement? Can you follow me on that? Let me read it again. The man of faith can easily afford to allow the man of sight to take his choice. Sure we can. God will take care of us. God will work it out. We don't have to be first. We wait on God, He'll give us the best. We don't have to try to be ahead of everybody else. And so, that's exactly what we see transpire. We not only see there's a difference between believers and a difference in believers, but we see there's a difference for believers. That is, some believers are going to end up with a lot more than other believers. Lot lifted his eyes and saw in one direction. God, in verse 14, told Abram to lift his eyes. Isn't that interesting? God didn't tell Lot to lift his eyes. Lot just lifted his eyes. But here in verse 14, the Lord told Abraham to lift his eyes. God's taking over the situation now for Abram. Lot handled his own situation. You know, he made his own choice. He as it were, made his own decisions, built his own world. But as Abraham acquiesced, as Abraham humbly with a broken spirit, a
allowed Lot to go ahead with his selfish choice and separate it, it's almost as if God said, okay, now, Abram, I'll take over the situation for you. Let me just run this ship at this point. And it's as if Abram said, all right, Lord, you do that. And so the Lord said, all right, Abram, lift your eyes now. And do you notice? Please note this in verse 14. Abram looked in all directions, didn't he? Lot would only look in one direction. Abram looked in all directions. He looked northward, southward, eastward, and westward. You see, when God opens our eyes, when we wait upon God and He opens our eyes, we get to look at the whole picture. We get to see things we never see before. And that's what happened to Abram. He looked in every direction. And then we notice in verse 15, notice what God says. Lot made his choice. And God says, listen, Abram, all the land which you see. And by the way, he looked in the direction Lot looked too. And he said, all the land which you see, I'm giving to you. Lot may think it's his, but I'm giving it to you. Go down to verse 17. It says, arise, walk in this land through its length and its breadth, for I'm giving it to you. I'm giving it to you, Abram. So Lot took a portion that he never could hold on to. Abram was given all. He got everything. Lot's portion was for a limited time. It was for the present. Abram's inheritance, you notice here, was forever. It was forever. Now that brings us to the key verse that we want to get hold of here in relation to God's dealing with Abraham. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 4. Just keep your finger there in 13. We'll finish up. I think about two-thirds of you are still awake, so we'll just go a few more minutes. Okay, 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Just a couple more minutes, and then we'll wind it up. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 18. Here's the key. See, these men were both looking, weren't they? Lot looked. Abram looked. And here we read, let's read 17 for connection. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. You see, the afflicted saint, the broken saint, gets a vision of the prosperous, easygoing, lighthearted, worldly saint doesn't get. And what's the vision he gets? We do not look at the things which are seen. The carnal, worldly Christian looks at the things which are seen. They have a tremendous hold, tremendous grip on it. That's what happened to Lot. He couldn't get his eyes off that land that looked like Egypt. But we look at the things which are not seen. Why? Why does God do that? Why does He try to get our eyes off the things which are seen? The well-watered plains, the lands that look like Egypt, the cities that look like Sodom and Gomorrah, the prosperity, the wealth, the easy life, the good life. Why does He try to get our eyes off of that? Well, because God knows. 18b. The things which are seen are temporary. Don't you see that? They're temporary. We give them all up, every one of them, right down to the last item. We give it up. It's temporary. It just doesn't last. You know, it's just lost to us. But the things which are not seen are eternal. Now, Abram, he couldn't see what God gave him that day. The direction he went, the land which he possessed, he just pitched a tent and, verse 18, dwelled under some trees. He couldn't see from where he was the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. I don't think the land in which he was in looked at all like the land of Egypt. It didn't look like a well-watered plain. There were just some trees, maybe some sand, and but he pitched his tent, and he built his altar. Lot, he never built an altar in his life. He didn't know what it was to build an altar. But Abraham, he pitched his tent and built his altar. In addition to land, he was given innumerable descendants. God says, like the dust of the earth. It's interesting how God begins this with him. He first talks about the dust, and then he goes on to the stars, and then he goes on to the sand and the seashore. He uses all the different innumerable things in nature. We begin to recognize there are certain things that can't be numbered in nature, and dust is one of them. And I believe that, since I've been helping my wife do a little housework around the house. She's been having problems with her knees and shoulder, and I help her a little with the housework. And I never realized that dust was so innumerable. Boy, you just can't, it's just a constant battle. Try to keep that stuff under control. Well, God says, I'm going to take you, and I'm going to give you descendants that if a man could number the dust of the earth. Think of that. To number the dust of the earth. If a man could number the dust of the earth, so your descendants could be numbered. What an amazing thing it is to serve the living God. Abram, you'd like to walk over to that altar there in Hebron. So Abram, I got a question for you. Are you happy under the trees here with this altar? Are you happier now than you were back there in Egypt? And I think Abram would say, brother, I wouldn't trade that place. I wouldn't trade it for a minute for these trees and this altar. Oh, to be able to call on God with a free heart, a free spirit. The world can't give you anything like that. Brethren, let's not waste our time on the things we see, on these temporary things. Let's learn to let go of them. But if we learn to let go of them, we'll be a man like Abram. Our heart will let others make their own choice first. The man who knows God can say, brother, you go ahead. You want to be first? Go ahead. I'm happy to be last. Because back here, you know, being last, God's there. You just go ahead. You want to strive? You want to be the top man? You go ahead. I choose to just wait. To wait on the Lord. Can you sense the peaceful spirit that comes to the heart of a man who is willing to wait upon the Lord? Shall we close in prayer? Our Father, what tremendous blessings you've given to us in Christ, but how little we've laid hold of them. Oh, Father, if we could know what you would like to do for us, if we'd but let you. We're so busy doing for ourselves. and we make such a miserable mess of it that we don't let you do for us. Father, help us to have that magnanimous spirit that's displayed here in Abram, to just let you make our choices for us, to let you lead us where you want, to let you do with us what you want. And you'll do it right. And you'll do it the best way. And we'll be the better for it. Help us to be in the Spirit, our Father, as we pray in Jesus' precious name. Amen.